Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this Tuesday, the 15th of November. Very nice to have you with us on this day. We welcome you. We welcome our panel. Let me introduce them to you, and then we will get started. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hey.
Hey. Mike Spain is with us. He's the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper. Good morning, Michael.
Hey.
Very nice to have you with us. And, well, finally he's back, and we'll stop being accused of having murdered him and put him in a closet. Rich Honan is here, corporate attorney and our dear friend who has you were in Florida last week?
Florida, Georgia.
You've been making the rounds.
Yeah, so, making the rounds.
Believe it or not, like most of our panelists, Rich has a wife, and sometimes we can't be a part of it. But anyway, he's with us, and we couldn't be more thrilled.
It's great to see everybody. So what did I miss?
That's funny.
I think you know. in an honest world that we live in, A, were you surprised? B, were you happy?
A, I was very surprised. B, yeah, I was. I think the surprise actually overweighed the other emotions. But yeah, I was pleased. I think somebody, I was talking to somebody on the beach in Florida, and this person said it very well. They said, "Yeah, I'm stunned, and I'm scared, blankless." And she said, "But I, you know, I'm a little bit hopeful." So I'm sure that doesn't ring with a lot of your people. But yeah, I was more surprised than anything. And yeah, of course, I was pleased.
All right.
But didn't the surprise just over, well, I guess on my side, the surprise just overcame everything. Just how is everybody so wrong on this stuff?
Well, that's, I mean,
I'm sure you've already talked
about
this.
We've been dissecting it for
almost everybody.
Yeah. Alan
called it?
Yeah.
I'm getting letters from, I got two letters saying, "My wife and I agree that you didn't really say he was going to win. You said he could win." And I'm saying to myself, first of all, that's not true. And secondly, are you really kidding? Do you mean to say that that's what you're going to spend your time writing letters on? You know?
I do remember you saying that you were worried and that people had to take this seriously, and there were some signs that you were not digging.
Well, I saw an interview with Nate Silver, you know, whose website predicted like an 80% chance that Hillary would be elected. And he said right before the election, you had dozens of polls across the country that had her 2 to 3 points up. Well, that's within the margin of error.
Absolutely.
So they were all right.
Absolutely. So he says he was right. He wasn't right.
No, yeah, and that's...
He wasn't right.
Because he was also saying that, you know, it was a 2-in-1 chance, and there was a... He had it... I mean, Rich mentioned the number. I think that was the Nate Silver number, which was 85% or whatever chance that she had of winning. So, yeah, that's not
But
fair.
Every day when you went to those national polls... Under the Nate Silver column, they always give you the polls, say, in the national polls in blue, you clicked on them, 1 point, 2 points, 1 point, right. 1 point for Trump. You know, how can you have an 85% chance of winning if those are the numbers?
Yeah, I agree with you. That seemed like a incorrect extrapolation of such a close poll, or such close polls, which they were drawing from. He used a lot of sports metaphors, like, you know, an NBA player hitting a foul shot or something, and, you know, that kind of thing, or a field goal at
34, yeah, right.
Right, and stuff like that.
All right, so the news of yesterday was, which we talked about yesterday, but the criticism started and it grew and grew, and that was the chorus of critics denouncing President-elect Donald Trump on Monday for appointing Stephen Bannon, a nationalist media mogul, to a top White House position. Even as President Obama described Mr. Trump as pragmatic, not ideological, and held out hope that he would rise to the challenge of the presidency. Mr. Obama said at a press conference yesterday, "It's important for us to let him make his decisions. The American people will judge over the course of the next couple of years whether they like what they see." In the midst of the furor over Mr. Bannon's appointment, which, by the way, is as his chief strategist, Civil rights groups, senior Democrats, and some Republican strategists have assailed Mr. Trump, saying that Mr. Bannon, the former head of Breitbart News, will bring anti-Semitic, nationalist, and racist views to the West Wing.
Well, there's no question he has said all of those things that get him that reputation. Does a leopard change his spots? I don't think so. He's got people out there defending him. He's got one Jewish guy who works for him, described himself as an Orthodox Jew, and says he says Shabbat Shalom every Friday to him as proof that the guy's not anti-Semitic. Well, you know, can you? Is Freud right? Is you know, 4 years old and your character is set, or can you change? Or can you change? I don't even care if he changes, as long as he behaves himself. It's best you can sort of hope for. And I think the idea that Trump put him not into the chief of staff role, but into the advisor role, probably indicates that Trump knows something about this guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly a coarse individual. He's not somebody who I'm not running around saying, "Wow, I'm really glad he's going to have the ear of the president." But I think a lot of it is also, I think a lot of it also points to, I think, one good thing that will come out of this election, and that is there's going to be more press inquiry. This is somebody like we know who Steve Bannon is.
Sure.
And I would venture to say we probably know more about him today than we knew about, say, Valerie Jarrett and David Axelrod at this time in 2008.
Well, I don't know about Axelrod.
Axelrod, yeah, he was kind of
but
a Democrat.
Jarrett, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and she has, and by all accounts, still has a tremendous amount of power. So I like whether I like the guy or not, and I'm not saying I love the guy. I do like the fact that there's at least this amount of inquiry, this amount of investigation that's going on, which I actually think that's a good harbinger.
And don't you think there was a lot of yes,
Bringer,
Harbinger.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, I believe that you know, there was a great deal said and written about him when he was named to the campaign in the general election. But I think a lot of that, two things, and we mentioned this yesterday, that he was really on the sidelines. You know, he didn't appear at events, he didn't get on TV, he was very much in the shadows of the campaign. Mm-hmm. Number one, but number two, also, even though there was at the time, you remember the ad with the Jewish star and all of that, and he was linked to that, and there was all kinds of things that came out of it. But by the same token, with those concerns, I think a lot of people ran it off because they thought, well, Trump's not going to win any, so we won't worry about this guy because we'll worry about the candidate instead.
But what we don't know, Joe, is what role he played with Trump. For example, we kept getting leaks that there were people who were saying, you know, Trump should, from his top staff, Trump should be less aggressive, da 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 da. But if you take a look at what Trump actually did and probably why he won, somebody had to be whispering in his ear, it's okay to be you, Donald.
Well, in the New York Times article, and I, you know, I will readily say that after the polls and the getting the wrong of the election, you don't know what to believe. But there was a New York Times article right before the election that said that in the dark days of the Trump campaign, when they were down, that there were three people in a room that would be there almost constantly, and it was
Giuliani,
his son-in-law Kushner. Steve Bannon and Donald Trump.
I have heard Giuliani was constantly.
And not Kellyanne Conway?
Well, I think those were all surrogates and the people that were out. But as far as sort of the brooding, you know, of kind of figuring out and sort of talking to him about the policy points, those were the three who seemed to have, I should say, that seemed to have the sway to get him to say what they wanted to say.
So there seems to be a big story this morning about Chris Christie.
Yes.
And that Chris Christie has been basically made persona non grata. In the
transition team.
Transition team. Yeah. Well, they took him out of the transition team, Mike. But they also are now. They say that there's a putsch going on in which all the Christie sycophants and friends who were on the transition team are being purged. So there's something about Christie that has happened here.
But we knew that, right? I mean, well,
he's tainted. Yeah. I mean, after the trial of the conviction of two of his immediate aides in New Jersey for having orchestrated the closing of the George Washington Bridge a couple of years ago, and it came out during that trial very clearly that they at least said that he was well aware of what was going on before it went on and during the time it was going on and did nothing to stop it. And that's tainted him. So, you know, they just may be holding him on the side until the air clears, or maybe it will never clear. And you're right. Yeah. But just getting back to Bannon, what do you guys think of the notion that Trump is trying to hear a lot of different voices so he can have a broader perspective? And he'll hear the more conservative, arguably the conservative point of view. He'll have Reince Priebus, who's extraordinarily politically savvy and is a reader of the middle America. And maybe he'll have others around him that will give him different perspectives. And that justifies the shortcomings or the blemishes, if you want to call them that, on Bannon's past. And he's a very, very, diverse person. He has a lot of Bannon has a lot of, different backgrounds as a business executive, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, what about that idea to just hear points of view, not shield himself from different points of view?
Mike, I hear that. But to me, that's a very I don't think those guys represent. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think they represent a very broad spectrum of points of view. I kind of feel like, when I hear those names, I kind of feel like when I walk into the president's room at the Ford Orange Club and you see the pictures of all the old presidents, and it runs the gamut from, old white guys with hair and old white guys who are bald.
Well, that's diversity.
Yeah, right. So and I love the Ford Orange Club. It's a great place. But when you look at the history, it's hard to look at it and say that there's a lot of diversity there. And so I see the political difference between a Bannon and
extreme right and moderate right.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? But if you want real I'd love to see him have some real diversity. And if not demographically, at least of political viewpoint, I don't know that he gets there. And the other thing I'll say about him is he's not afraid to fire people, right? No jokes, but listen, he offloaded, Lewandowski was apparently they were tight friends and he offloaded him, publicly. And that's when the campaign turned around. He offloaded Christie. I never understood the whole attraction.
Christie backed him early. I think that might.
Yeah. And to have an actual elected official, do that.
But, I see Priebus as sort of water. Doesn't have any character. He's water. He's there. He knows the way to do things. He knows the people to talk to, but he's not an opinion leader in the same way as these other guys are. And I think that's what this is all about. One guy is a nuts and bolts. I'll hold the door and make sure that this thing works right. The other guy is, sitting there with spouting and fomenting. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, but I think Trump can probably spout and foment with the best of them, and I think he probably at some point will be able to maybe assimilate some of those positions. But yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Well, don't you think though that when we look at 4,000 appointments basically that Trump has to make, I think that's the number that's being bandied about over the next 7 or 8 weeks, and obviously not all will be filled by Inauguration Day, but that what the president said yesterday is we'll see how it works. Some you learn, the job sort of teaches you, and everyone will find out, and we are in uncharted territory because he has no government experience.
Well, boy, this is getting to be really hokey. I mean, he's now insisting that the kids get top security clearance. He's also saying, and his people are also saying, that he's not putting his businesses into a blind trust, but that the kids are going to be running the business. And that he won't be telling them what to do. How could that be? How can you give them security clearance on the one part, talking to them and telling them, and at the same time saying that they're going to run your businesses in a sort of a blind way. That's that to me is a little bit much.
Well, look, a blind trust is supposed to be what it really is. It's supposed to be we don't. We're going to invest your money for you. You know, this is what politicians do. They put it into a blind trust, and some investment professional says, "I'm not going to tell you whether you're invested in GM or GE or something, or right. you know, puts or calls or whatever." I think it's no matter who owns it, no matter where the ownership is, I think it's pretty clear that a lot of Trump's fortune is going to be tied up in you know the Trump entities.
Right, it's a little different. I mean, yeah. which Trump entity?
Yeah, right, exactly. So I don't see that
well,
as a
but
major.
It isn't good. I mean, you take a guy like Michael Bloomberg. He really did have a blind trust, and he went back and he went back.
Think he didn't know that he owned Bloomberg News?
You think everybody didn't know? You know, that's a good example. Rich, as an attorney, what is the difference between the way Bloomberg did it and the way that Trump is describing that he'll do it?
Well, I think Bloomberg, I think it's going to end up being the same because I think what they're going to say is, you know, there's my assets and they have been transferred. The ability to direct them has mm-hmm. been transferred. I don't have any
But Trump isn't talking
that.
About that. Trump's yeah. talking about just passing it to his children and not having it be handled by an outside
it's
professional.
It's very unclear what's
yeah.
going to happen.
No, I think that's what he's going to do. I mean, I think people will take shots at it. And the minute he makes a decision that is perceived to be in his business interests and not in the country's interest, people will be all over him, as they should. Which I will say, I know we're running up against a stop, but I think one of the good things about this whole thing is and I'll ask you, Mike, we can get back to it afterwards. Maybe the press goes back to truly now being a truly investigative, suspicious, questioning press.
Yeah, we should come back on that.
What makes you think they haven't been doing that?
The New York Times says they're going to redirect their efforts. What more do you want?
There you go. There we go.
I still don't understand that letter. I know we talked about it yesterday. Yeah, I still don't understand it. Yeah. But all right, we have a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about stuff. We have letters. Rich Honan is here. Mike Spain is here. Alan Chartok is here, and we welcome your letters. It's a panel at WAMC.org. panel@WAMC.org, and we will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Tuesday morning. It's the 15th of November. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and Rich Honan make up the group. We are talking about, all things new administration and president-elect. We have letters. We'll go to those, and then we'll hit some more topics along the way.
I also did take a shot at the press before.
Mike wanted to respond to.
Just to clarify, your question was, now the press can go back to doing investigative journalism?
Yeah.
As opposed to what were they doing before? What was the Washington Post doing? What was David Farenthold doing?
Where was the press questioning the administration over the last 8 years? Where was that?
Oh, I think
this is from
there.
A school of two wrongs make a right. Yeah.
At least we'll have a press that will question this administration, and that's their role.
And be suspicious and do all the things that a press is supposed to do and not be an advocate. Does nobody think that the press kind of edged into some of the press edged into the role of advocate versus journalist at some points during
this
campaign?
When you report what's going on and what's behind it, and you report the many flaws that were in the past of Donald Trump's businesses, his personal behavior, is that advocacy or is that accurate reporting?
That's accurate. If you're also reporting, you know, said flaws going on in the current administration and everything else.
Oh, I think during the campaign the focus was on Hillary, and we learned a lot of things about Hillary that I think ended up hurting her
every day.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to get into big trouble here and agree with Rich. Mm. And here's not about the Obama administration, because I think the Times did a pretty admirable, that's what I read every day, work on that. But I do think that the Times and the Washington Post and some others decided that Trump was going to be a real danger to the United States. And therefore, they said they threw caution to the wind and they became, as Rich says, advocates. Not that they didn't.
I don't know that they crossed over to become advocates, but they had a vigil, a vigilant role.
They did.
In pointing out the dangers they perceived. If they didn't do that, they'd be shirking their responsibilities.
Well, Mike, let me give you an example. And I love the Times, don't get me wrong. But there was an article a few days before the election that said Hispanics were going to turn out. This was literally an article that said Hispanics were going to turn out in record numbers, and that spoke well for Hillary's chances.
Well, they that was based on early voting trends.
Okay, here's the point. I think they did I think the Times did what they should have done, but it was. See, this is where Rich and I.
It was perceived as being advocates by people who were offended by it. Evidently,
I wasn't offended by it. I thought, hey, go get them. I thought that was great. But I think they did it.
I think the press, and you guys talked about this on the Media Project Sunday and Monday, but I think the press has a lot to fear from the Trump administration. If you think the Obama administration, which was not good to the press, and the media had a lot of problems, and they were stopped from getting information, and Obama would go around the mainstream media and go to, you know, alternate media sources to try to, dilute the the importance of the media. He, and there's been a lot of criticism of that. I don't think that holds a candle to what we might face under the Trump administration. I mean, he's hostile to the press. He's talking about changing laws so it makes it more restrictive for the press and shields the press from more information. I really do expect that it's going to be a tough time at a time when the press is also under economic duress.
And absolutely right.
I don't think there'll be any efforts. I mean, even Nixon, of all people, his administration had the Newspaper Preservation Act, which allowed newspapers to go into joint operating agreements to stay in business. I mean, that'll never happen under the Trump administration.
But isn't there something to be said for the fact that the press, if that's true, I don't agree that, but if that's true, the press is going in, eyes wide open. I think it took, if right? Well,
right.
No.
Maybe they were enamored by Obama and the sort of romance of this.
Is that not true, Mike? Yeah. Though, but isn't it true that it took the press a little while to realize they were getting the shuffle from the Obama administration? Because I'm hearing from a lot of press people now that they were not very transparent, but that you weren't hearing that the first 2 years.
I don't know when it began, but
it wasn't on day one.
It wasn't on day one.
Today, it's on day minus
okay.
one. Is what
well,
I'm saying.
In that sense, we have an advantage because we know that Trump has been secretive and not been, he didn't reveal his tax returns, and he has said contradictory things. And when you call him on those, he gets very hostile. But anyways, okay. Don't you have letters?
Yeah, we do. Hi, all. Welcome back, Rich. I oppose your views, but they provide a reality check for my progressive views. Racism, sexism, misogyny, anti-environment, Islamophobic, etc. are harmful when explicit, such as swastikas on a synagogue. While that is a danger, the more dangerous forms are pernicious. That is the structural forms that someone like Steve Bannon will promote. This is not a liberal conservative issue. It is an authoritarian pseudo-populist issue.
Can I tell you, I have a friend who, up until Tuesday, was a very, very, very close friend of mine. I thought very tight friend, who's that same thing said, now there's going to be swastikas on temples, and there's going to be the KKK marching, and there's going to be attacks on campuses. And I said, and you're putting me in that league? And they were like, yeah, I do. And besides the fact that that was obviously kind of the end of the friendship, I was thinking, wow, if people really think that, how does anybody ever bridge that gap? Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. I mean, right or wrong, how do you... You talk about bringing people together. How do you bridge that kind of gap?
Well, we were talking about something during the break, which I think should be mentioned now. And that is when Obama came in, I think you were saying the kind of feelings that people now have about Trump, that liberals and progressives and moderates have towards Trump, is what people were feeling about Obama when he came in. And I said, I don't think so. I think this is the worst I have ever seen.
No, I disagreed with you during the break, yeah. But we'll make it now public. I think that I now, today, understand how how some very conservative people felt when Obama entered the White House. They really thought that the country was going down the tubes, and they felt that way. And despite his successes, they wouldn't acknowledge those, and they just were terrified at what it meant. It meant a major shift. And I think now the way that a lot of liberal people are looking in, the upcoming Trump administration and predicting, you know, the most dire situation. I get a glimpse of that.
If it helps, I know you want to read them, but first of all, I will say on the conservative side, it actually 08 wasn't that bad. 08 was, all right, I don't agree with
a
the guy.
Bit of optimism.
And you're like, but you know what? No matter what, it's kind of cool, right? It's about time and it's kind of cool. But by 2012, I will tell you after the 2012 election, I was talking about this with somebody, but absolute fury, absolute despair to the point of devastation, absolute loss of faith in all governmental institutions, right? It's all a sham. And most importantly, I felt like after, and tell me if you share this, I felt like somebody ran for president who pointed at me and said, you are the problem. You're the person that we have to grind out of the way. You're the person we got to get rid of. And that was bad enough. And then 50 million people said, yeah, we think the same thing. So that's how I felt in 12. Are you telling me you guys feel that differently now?
Yeah. That's interesting. Your description of how people felt in 2012 might better describe the way people who don't like Trump are feeling now.
No, you see, I don't think right.
Okay.
Here's what I think: people are scared to death. We just spent a lot of time, Rich, when in your absence, discussing a very enigmatic letter from the publisher of the New York Times and Dean McHatt. I'm sure you read it.
I heard about it.
Yeah, and we had
I was drinking Coronas on the beach.
We had no idea what it meant. But I think people are really scared of this guy. They're really scared of what a Rudy Giuliani would do if he were the Attorney General or the Secretary of State.
Can I just ask? I agree. Where is that coming from?
He was the mayor of the world after 9/11.
Not the fear part. I'm saying, where does it? How did it become a good idea that Giuliani, as Secretary of State?
He wants it. He has made it clear that he wants.
I get that he stepped up and everything, and you know, loyalty in politics is something. But wow, I don't even see the skill set.
Okay, let me put it this way: letters, get ready.
Okay.
I'd rather have him as Secretary of State than I would as Attorney General.
Oh, I probably agree with that, but isn't he tailor-made for Homeland Security?
What'd you say?
Isn't Giuliani, if you've got to give Giuliani a job, isn't it Homeland Security?
Well, let's talk about that. The last time he got involved with Homeland Security, the Bushes were in office and he was recommending, Bernie Kerik to be the director of Homeland Security, who ended up in the hoosegow.
Well.
Just thought I'd mention that. Michael says, I listen to Roundtable religiously every morning, but I just turned it off. Hello, Michael. We know you're still listening. For the first time,
even when I heard
Onan say he was pleased with the results, I won't hear if you read my letter. Oh, yes, you will. You're there. We know it. But ask him how he reconciles his pleasure for the election of this fascist to his kids. See you tomorrow.
I actually, in my mind, I know here come the letters, I felt that one of the reasons I did not want to vote for Hillary was because of my kids, because I wanted my kids to be able to have choices when they grew up, to be able to have some say in the way the world was going to run, to not have to deal with a budget that was already spent for the next 25 years.
And so forgive me for this, Rich. If they or their children or their children's children needed an abortion, you would say that's a choice that they should have?
Absolutely.
Well, they're not going to have it.
I hope they do have it.
Well, they're not going
to
have it.
And I will fight like hell to make sure they still do.
Well, that presumes that people who are happy with the outcome of the election agree and embrace everything that Trump has agreed with and that his staunch
That's a good point, because we don't.
There were 75% of the public said before the election, I know surveys are somewhat inaccurate, but somewhere in the
mid-70s. Yeah, I'll never believe another poll again,
right.
But go ahead.
Somewhere in the mid-70s, they had serious problems with Trump, and yet many of them had to vote for Trump for him to win. That's because they also had serious problems with Hillary.
The 40% didn't move. The 40% did not move.
Her 40%?
His 40%.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Did not move, period. Oh, hers was all over the place. But his, that 40% did not move. And that is the point.
But the point is, and I think Rich is providing that insight, is that just because someone voted against Hillary in by doing so voted for Trump, it doesn't mean that they embrace everything about him. They're just kind of hopeful that, you know, there'll be some change that they can.
I bring you back to 1933,
1929. I'm not embracing this.
People said the same thing. They said the same thing. I don't believe him. He's a clown. Hitler. He's a clown. I don't believe him. It isn't so. And yet it was. So I think to some degree, when a guy says something, you got to believe it and not say, oh, he doesn't really mean that.
But even Obama said that yesterday at his press conference. He said that he's a pragmatist. He's not an ideologue.
Yeah,
well, and that's significant.
Well, I think that's his best hope.
What is he going to say?
Yeah, right. He's got to salvage something.
I thought he was extraordinary. The president was extraordinarily gracious, and he's doing everything he can to throw his whatever political power he has right now to giving Trump a chance to demonstrate.
I don't disagree.
You said the day after the election, Alan, should we immediately oppose everything Trump does and try to make him fail the way Mitch McConnell and the Republican leaders of the Congress did for Obama 8 years ago? And you said, it depends. So let's just see what he does.
I think we're better prepared. I think the country is better prepared for this than say, you know, I think the more open press, I think there's already opposition, you know, planned opposition, you know, organized opposition. I think the whole thing with the polls being wrong has reminded the country that, you know, look at things with your own eyes, make your own decisions, don't always rely on what experts are telling you. And I think all of that arms the country better to deal with an administration that you might find scary.
We'll see. Leslie says, where are all the ladies?
Remember the ladies.
They were here yesterday.
And the day before.
Yeah,
the
tomorrow.
Day before. Day before.
Sometimes.
What's with you people?
Oh, I thought that she was talking about the Trump administration cabinet members.
Oh, that's a good point.
That is a good point.
That's a really good point. Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry if we missed that.
Peter says, how can Trump possibly survive with his overwhelming conflict of interest in business dealings? No president has ever had such a Byzantine tangle of conflicts while serving as leader of our country, and we thought Cheney was a problem with Whitewater. Trump will be impeached for legitimate crimes and misdemeanors. I'm going to tell you something. If he doesn't watch what he's doing, he will be.
I think Cheney was Halliburton.
Yeah, right. Halliburton, right. You're quite right. A couple of things here. He's got some big trial things coming up. He'll settle, of course, the Trump University. We know that. I think you said that, Rich, a long time ago.
They should have settled it before. Now they really got to settle if the judge doesn't move this trial. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
I'm sure he doesn't want to settle. It's really hard to settle a case when the client is saying, you know, I'd rather pay you than pay them.
But there's one other thing, and then
they never pay you.
When you talk about impeachment, you got a Republican Congress, which would have to do the impeachment. You got a Senate, which have to have the trial, right? What are you looking puzzled about?
Over Trump University impeachment?
No. She's saying there's going to be an impeachment sooner or later because of Trump and his character. Okay, let's assume that. I'm saying to you, looking askance.
Yeah, okay, no, I'm saying
that ain't going to happen right now. You got a Republican House of Representatives and a Republican Senate, except you have sitting out there a bunch of people, Republicans, who got called things like Little Marco and this and that. And underneath that veneer of support, there are people who will never forget that.
Can I tell you, the same friend who accused me of being a KKK, one day I used that phrase, I said Little Marco, and this individual said, you know, you're shorter than he is. I said, wow.
Well, it doesn't
Ouch.
Matter.
That hurt.
Well, no, that shouldn't hurt. That's what he did. He attached a name to everybody.
I think Rubio is going to be a player in this.
He will.
In the Senate.
Sure.
He has a level of independence. It gives him a very good position.
How many votes down are they? Yeah. Are they two votes 52? Down?
52? 51?
I thought it was 51-49.
51, right, because ended up losing. Yes, yeah. 51-49.
That's pretty close.
I think the other thing that will be interesting in the Senate will be who's the leaders on the on both sides, actually. If the Senate turns out to be one wing led by Elizabeth Warren versus another wing led by like Ted Cruz, then we're going to have big problems. But if the Senate is going to be Chuck Schumer, as I think it will be, and, you know, maybe, you know, some more moderate people on the Republican side, might actually get something done
All right, we're going to take a break there.
Sorry, to filibuster.
That's okay. We'll be back.
Filibuster.
We'll be back right after
howdy
this.
Howdy doody.
Music sounds like a soundtrack to an Alfred Hitchcock movie.
You're on. Okay.
I love accordion music, as you know.
We need more accordions.
Hey, welcome back to our roundtable panel.
It's hard to dance to.
Very nice to have you all here. We have letters. We have some more letters to get to, and then we're going to take a news break at the top of the hour. But I think we have enough letters to sustain us till then.
You certainly do, Joe, and as always, you're right. This just in, the election will be awarded to did not vote, who won the popular vote, and the Electoral College lesson learned. And that's from Steve. Well,
I think it's a fair discussion. Why do we even still have the Electoral College?
Why
is that? That's a very fair, legit discussion,
right.
Isn't it?
And depending on what day it is, the Republicans or the Democrats have adopted that. But as I have said many times since this election, I didn't see any letters from me saying abolish the Electoral College during the campaign, because everybody thought that was what was going to be Hillary's strength. Right.
It's like term limits.
Yeah. Alan was right about the Trumpster. Priebus married the GOP to Trump's rising star. Priebus was a technician who provided a data-driven get-out-the-vote operation. Priebus, Ryan, and Walker delivered Wisconsin to Trump. All right. And reporters always have a cozy relationship with presidents and the like, so they don't get cut off. Being cut off from the start might be better. And that's from Kathleen. Well, we've talked about that. The idea that, you know, that reporters, you had a guy on the Times Union, Mike, years ago, and the mayor got mad at him because he went around and he put tickets on it because the mayor's people put tickets on people's cars at the press conference. And he said, I'll never talk to you again to the reporter. I never did. They had to transfer him. So there you go. Panel, please spend another moment on Trump demanding that his kids be given top security clearance. If that's true and the relevant agencies cave to his demands without undertaking the proper investigations, then all bets are off when it comes to the rule of law, and we are all in really big trouble.
Will he be giving the nuclear codes to his children?
Well, the just to clarify, there has been a report within the last hour that a Trump official came out and said that report is not true, that he did not ask for the security clearance, and it was blown out of proportion. So for whatever that's worth.
Let's put it this way, Joe. They saw the train coming down the track, and they said, let's get off the tracks.
Wait, so it was reported that he asked for security clearance without investigation?
No.
Just by fiat?
No.
I mean, the security clearance requires investigation.
Yeah, okay.
KKK swastika is anti-Semitism, persecution of Muslims, Mexicans, and refugees. I no longer associate with any family or friends who support Trump. This is your issue, Rich. Yeah. I hold them as racist, full of hatred, and that with the rise of Trump, their true nature has been revealed. Sorry, Rich, is in the same category.
You know, I'm sorry too, because
that doesn't define you.
Plus that's 60 million people.
And we love having you here, by the way.
But to say simply because you voted for Trump, I mean, it's like the litmus test, you know. You voted for Trump, therefore you're a racist, you hate Muslims, you hate African Americans, you want to ban abortion and everything else. It's just too simplistic. It doesn't define what really went on Election Day.
Stacy with an E writes, I find Rich's suggestion that the press will be there to call Trump out when he makes decisions favorable to his own personal interests instead of that of the country as hollow. Let's say the press does so. Then what? Trump will reverse himself? I don't think so. Well, I think there's a lot to be said about this this issue. I'll tell you right now. Apparently, a lot of people are staying away from Trump hotels and from Trump dresses from the daughter or whatever else she makes because they don't like them, and there is that. I chuckled this morning when Alan called rinse water, and I think it's a fitting analogy. However, it is important to note that water is the most powerful force on Earth. It can permeate almost anything, cause canyons, and bring life. I know he was referring to something else, but it's important to note the analogy.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
I bet you do. Okay, so Paul says, glad to have Rich back. Yesterday was, oh, we did this. Yesterday, I feel more optimistic. How did that get through here? okay, tell me if I read this one already. Alan, I was wondering what your thoughts are on this nationalistic movement that is sweeping through France, England, and the USA. While Germany had been holding strong, there's also a push against Merkel's immigration, that's right, stance. Growing up as a first-generation American from parents from both Austria and the former Yugoslavia, I fear a world war. Lisa.
Well, that's a legit fear, right? Hopefully not world war, but you know this whole idea that I think it's a matter of degree and extremism, right? It's one thing to say yes, you know, these people need help; they need to be really relocated. But when you're looking at millions of people and people now perceive that this might change their way of life, I think I think there is more opposition to it, and people look at it much more closely.
Alan, the panel spoke yesterday about how the Times and other print media missed the story on how less educated and financially insecure voters went for Trump. What was missed is why more educated and financially secure people voted for him. You have Rich on today, and you should have him explain his support for Trump other than some vague need for change. I suspect it is the social issues which is the basis of Rich's support, but we won't know until you press him for an answer. Consider yourself pressed.
And
if you could do it in 30 seconds, yeah, that'd be awesome.
The whole idea, the whole executive orders thing, which I know sounds kind of arcane or kind of microscopic, but the whole idea that somebody would become president and say, I don't have to listen to anything. I have a pen and a phone, and I'm going to issue these orders. That to me seems.
But the fact was that Bush and others had used the executive order more often than Obama.
They didn't crow about it, and they didn't, and not, and
that's
Mike
clean.
And Mike, they certainly, you can't argue the previous administrations used them within the pretty accepted purview of executive orders. You have to concede that Obama pushed the idea of legislation by executive order far beyond.
I think FDR actually was one who began that,
yep.
and then it evolved.
And look how that
good
worked
thing
out.
You're old, yeah. Mike.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll have news, and then we'll continue our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Oh, we're here.
It's a cat. I don't nice one. Meow. Meow, right back to you. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. It's Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rich Honan making up the group this morning. There was a sad item in the news. I think it hit a lot of us as surprising and very hard yesterday in the journalism world that Gwen Ifill passed away. Covered the White House, covered Congress, covered campaigns. She was with the Washington Post, the New York Times, NBC, and certainly most prominently at the end of her career at PBS and the NewsHour and, of course, Washington Week. She was, she often did, moderated presidential debates, vice presidential debates, and she and Judy Woodruff were the moderators of the NewsHour, the hosts of the NewsHour, and the first all-female grouping to host a nightly newscast. She was, we've had her on the show, and she was just a lovely, amazing woman who had, you know, they're the people who you lose, and you can kind of read between the lines of the people who are being nice, but and then the people who, you know, are saying nice things about somebody they don't like. I think everybody, she had such the respect of her peers, and everybody, And the president had some lovely remarks during his press conference yesterday about her. Died at 61 years old, had ovarian cancer, and had been fighting it for about a year, and really only missed the last week of work.
Yeah.
And
she took a month off earlier in the year for treatments, but she was working right up to just a little more than a week ago.
Right.
And then she died in hospice in Washington, D.C.
It's a terrible disease. It really is.
Yeah. It's and it was
scary how quick.
Yeah, very quick. Yeah. And it was very sad. So, but we just want to remember Gwen Ifill this morning. She was really terrific. And I think we have some...
Anyone see the news hour last night, Judy Woodruff?
Yeah, did a beautiful
tribute.
Beautiful. They did almost the entire show and dedicated it to her. And they showed some great pieces. And again, you could just see from all of her colleagues who had worked with her at NBC, at the Washington Post, at the New York Times, and PBS, what a great respect they had for her. And all across the aisle, too. Republicans, Democrats, everybody was just very, they just thought she was the gold standard.
She retained this dignity that, you know, right? She had like a sense of dignity about her that is not as apparent right now, you know, when you look, especially on the, you know, broadcast news. But I just thought she was very powerful.
It's uterine cancer. Yeah, because I had heard also that it was, I guess, endometrial. So 61 years old, and we remember her this morning, and it's a sad thing for journalism.
Way too young. And, you know, some people, it's terrible that it took a year because, you know, we know people like Linda Norris of the Linda Norris Auditorium. Yep. 10 years. I think it was 10 years. And so just to flip the coin.
We want to get to some other topics as well, and let's do that. And we also, then we'll have some more letters. First, we go to the story about the SEC. Rich, do you want to weigh in on this? You know, you're the business guy. With the SEC head's resignation, the field clears for Donald Trump to cut back regulations. Mary Jo White, the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, on Monday announced that she would step down 2 years before the end of her term, clearing the way for President-elect Donald Trump to reshape the way Wall Street is regulated.
Yeah, but doesn't...
Or not.
Right, right. I always thought she was an odd choice anyway, right? She was a former U.S. attorney, right?
She
former
was. Prosecutor. And then she was in corporate law defending Wall Street.
Right, yeah. Right. I guess under the the Joseph P. Kennedy kind of idea that, you know, when Kennedy was the first head of the SEC and he was widely acknowledged to be, you know, one of the real big stock crooks. But they said when they put him in charge of the SEC, he knew all the bad things what people were doing, and so he was very effective. But I didn't understand. Doesn't everybody resign? Doesn't everybody tender their resignation?
She had another a couple of years in her term or something
like
that.
See, in some of these cases, they have holdovers simply to protect the office, as in, dare I mention it, the FBI.
Yeah.
That's going to be an interesting relationship.
He's got to go, right? He's got to go either way.
Well, I don't think so. Presidents have tangled with FBI directors.
No, I don't.
Taking office and then kept them in place.
But he's so, right or wrong, I'm not saying right. It just feels like I felt like he would have had to go either way, no matter who won.
Well, he did go one way, and we remember.
No. What I meant by either way was whether Hillary won or whether Trump won. Comey had to go because, for whatever reason, the office became involved in politics. Now you could argue that was the scope of the investigation, but I just feel like what's the upside to keeping him?
The upside to keeping him is that he won for Hillary said that the reason she lost was because of him, and Trump certainly is not unaware of that and says, okay, I owe you, because a lot with Trump is personal sense of I owe somebody something.
I think that's true about Trump. I think that might be true about other politicians as well. And I think by the way that instinct is more when people start as either underdogs or not, you know, not considered to be the front runner, although Trump kind of jumped out and was front runner right away. And so I think that that's why, or like an Obama, for example. I mean, when Obama ran against Hillary, I mean, he was pretty close to an unknown. Right. And so the people who were with him early, he was very, very loyal to.
But you know who the known was, Rich?
Sorry?
You know who the known was? She was. And the same thing happened here that happened there to some degree.
Democratic, look, it's not, don't look across the aisle. It's the Democratic Party who didn't want Hillary. It's the Democrats who did not elect Hillary.
They didn't
nominate her in 08, and they didn't elect her in 16.
You're talking about the people now. You're not talking about the party. The party wanted her.
It's interesting that these days we actually have to make that distinction. Well, we do the same. The Republicans do the same thing, right? The voters versus the party.
Leadership. I think you ought to say party leadership. They decided a couple of years ago that Hillary Clinton was going to be their candidate, and they did everything they could to keep everybody else out of it. And that became evident. But Mary Jo White, she's one of five appointments now that the new president will be selecting for the Security Exchange Commission. And that is the watchdog of Wall Street. So expect some changes in the way that
I think it's disgusting. Yeah. I mean, really, because
she's stepping down, or
and that he will have his way, and you can be sure he's going to put somebody in who is extremely favorable to the very street which brought on the crisis that we all went through, and you know that's why she was appointed. She was a prosecutor. She was doing her job. I don't care what anybody says. We know that Elizabeth Warren wanted her to step down and asked the president to have her step down. Nevertheless, that's the way it is. And I think it's disgusting that these guys, you know, a kid goes into a grocery store with a gun and 10 years in prison sometimes. Some of these people really got away with murder.
Oh, I don't disagree. I think when you were appointed by administration A and now administration B comes in, I just think you have to tend to your resignation. I just think it's a matter of honor. And then if they want to, I think you should.
That's why they make these overlapping terms.
Right. So to
continuity, just, I think, is the term you're looking
for.
Well,
no, it
is. I thought the term you were looking for was overcoming the will of the people. But okay, we'll go with continuity.
Wow, you guys are rough.
Sheesh. So this just cleared on the New York Times. President-elect Donald Trump's transition operation plunged into disarray on Tuesday morning with the abrupt resignation of Mike Rogers,
who was a Christie guy,
who had handled national security matters, the second shakeup in a week on a team that has not yet begun to execute the daunting task of taking over the government. In a statement on Tuesday, Mr. Rogers...
Is that really his name?
Yes, Mr. That's Rogers. Great. lovely sweater, too. A former congressman from Michigan who led the House Intelligence Committee said that he... was proud of the team that we assembled for Trump for America to produce meaningful policy, personnel, and agency action guidance on the complex national security challenges facing our great country, that he was pleased to hand off our work to a new transition team led by Vice President-elect Mike Pence. Mr. Pence took the helm of the effort on Friday after Mr. Trump unceremoniously removed Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, who had been preparing with Obama administration officials for months to put the complex transition process into motion. Now, the effort is frozen, senior White House officials say, because Mr. Pence has yet to sign legally required paperwork to allow his team to begin collaborating with President Obama's aides on the handover. An aide to Mr. Trump's transition team, who insisted on anonymity.
Yeah. That's why we pay you the bill.
Thank you very much.
None of us could have said that.
To discuss internal matters so that the delay was taking place because the wording of the document was being altered and updated. Still,
what?
The slow and uncertain
when
start.
When you consider it's probably a non-disclosure agreement, which is about the most standard document you could have. They're playing with the wording.
Okay. Still, the slow and uncertain start to what normally is a rapid and meticulously planned transfer of power could have profound implications on Mr. Trump's nascent administration, challenging the efforts of the president-elect to gain control of the federal bureaucracy and begin building a staff fully briefed on what he will face in the Oval Office on day one.
That's just a totally objectively written paragraph, right, Mike? There's no advocacy.
Wait a minute. What advocacy is that? That is reporting that if you get a bad start and you get setbacks in the beginning, it is limiting your ability to take over the administration.
As opposed to continuing the policy, or they could have said continuing the policy of moving the operations from disgraced Governor Chris Christie to Vice President-elect Mike Pence. It was not unexpected that another Christie appointee was taken off of the transition committee.
But I don't know how that amounts to advocacy journalism.
I'm going to guarantee you guys that when that when Andrew Cuomo becomes the president in 2020, there will be a very swift swift transition, and they will know everybody who's going to every slot like they did when they were when he became governor.
If anyone is interested in that particular topic, I urge them to read the column today by my colleague at the Times Union.
Put the headline on
Chris
it?
Chris Churchill.
It was a great headline. What did it say? Andrew Cuomo in 2020, something like that. Yeah,
something like
that. I really like his writing.
Yeah.
He's very good.
Great guy.
I'm wondering if he knows he's on the show tomorrow.
He knows now.
Maybe I'll defer, and you can ask Chris why he thinks it's unlikely that Andrew Cuomo would be a contender for the 2020 election.
You know what is bad? We're talking about the SEC. The other thing I would love to get away from, and I think it's too deeply embedded, is this idea that the various agencies have now become policy-making entities, rather than just managerial administrative entities, you know, carrying out legislation.
What do you mean, I don't know that that's new. I think that the SEC has been a policy, you know, developing agency at the direction of the president.
You've got these powerful laws that were set up to guide.
But it's the rules and regulations to implement the laws that you're talking about.
Yeah, I agree, and I think part of that is, you know, every big legislation ends with, you know, we'll promulgate the necessary regulations. But I think they've become separate power
entities unto themselves.
They shouldn't be. But anyway.
All right. Some letters.
This is just for you, Joe. I've been a New York Times subscriber since the 80s, but I stopped reading 2 weeks before Election Day. The rabid partisanship turned me off. I think their reporting lulled us into believing in HRC when HCR, HRC, when it was all but certain. Deeply appreciative of WMC's more balanced reporting. Loved the roundtable. Where are the women today? The women on every day. What are you talking about?
Rosemary was out today. We had Rich come in. Rosemary will be back tomorrow.
And we are in no way suggesting that I am an adequate replacement for Rosemary.
No, right? You are terrific.
We're rotating the junior varsity.
We're a rotating team, right?
Good morning. Yes. Good morning, panel, says Linda.
Good morning. Perhaps
the problem started with the use of executive signing statements in the Bush administration.
Yeah, you know, that's correct, actually.
And Mary.
You know, that's kind of gratuitous. The signing statements are pretty gratuitous.
And Mary, on the same thought, says, executive orders, Reagan, 381, Obama, 256.
Look at the scope, not the number.
Barbara says, in regards to executive orders, what was President Obama supposed to do when the Congress refused to work with him to hammer out workable solutions to pressing issues?
And the answer is lead and legislate. Refer to the Constitution?
Please. John says, I'm gay. Every other LGBT person I talk to expects to lose all of our civil rights, if not our lives, sometimes in the next 10 to 20 years. You see, Rich, we LGBTQ folk have been watching the people of Trump is appointing or says he'll appoint for 24 years now. We know what they want to do to us, and we have every reason to be afraid.
I think that's mixed. I can certainly understand why anybody would be fearful that there will be changes in the law and the rights that have been granted by the Supreme Court and by the government and executive orders to LGBT individuals. But Donald Trump, actually, he has not been bad on that issue at all. He's been comfortable with it, and he's talked openly about how he supports LGBT rights.
But there's a tremendous amount of fear from that community that
I've heard
articulated.
Mike Pence is going to come in. What are they?
No, I think
the fear is legitimate, but I
think
there's a reason to be hopeful that that is not going to change.
But it's incumbent on incumbent upon the administration, I think, to reach out and make it clear that, you know, there is not the antipathy there that is expected.
Which you could argue he had the opportunity to do during the interview on 60 Minutes on Sunday, and on several cases did not, or at least make it very clear.
I think if you were worried about, Roe versus Wade, I think Sunday's 60 Minutes interview should make you
that was
worried.
Scary. That was legit scary.
It was really scary. More?
Yes.
Okay. Chums, says Elliot. I like that.
And we are chums, by the way. Where are the women, by the way?
I intensely dislike Rich.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. We need that balance.
Great to be back.
But, listen up, but we need that balance. I'm not sure he is that balanced. Perhaps a little too willing to ignore evidence and posit alternative interpretations of evidence. But I'm ready to double down, as the president-elect say, give him a show, straight right or counterpoint point. I really think it should be, and yes, pay him. Make it more than a public service. We couldn't afford you.
Yeah.
Not what you make.
I consider this a public service.
Yeah, and we do too.
As do we.
And
yes.
We thank you. Jerome says, listen to our president's press conference yesterday and thought, for all Obama's faith in institutions and laws and precedent, I'm afraid that Trump et al. Do not share this faith nor care. I watched all the debates in horror and disbelief as he threatened Hillary, spouted invective and nonsense and lies. We are about to find out how durable our democratic institutions are. I am not optimistic.
The answer to that, though, by the way, is very durable, because we've gotten through bad presidents before. And if you think it's going to be a bad president, and you know, we've always come through it.
I always say to a certain person who leaves her keys in the car, and I say, those keys, that car is going to get stolen sometime. I say that certain person. And she says, never been stolen. Stolen before. And I always say, just takes once. Okay. Richard says, Rich, the Kellyanne of Roundtable.
The Kellyanne.
Wow.
Oh, yes. Kellyanne Conway.
I think that's a compliment. No.
I find her.
As an aside, has anyone heard a speculation about what role she might have in the Trump administration? I haven't heard.
I thought it was going to be communications director.
But that hasn't happened.
Not yet. Rich, the Kellyanne Roundtable, seldom answers directly. It's always equivalency. Like, what about Hillary or Barack did this? The equivalency in the media is not good reporting of facts. That's why we have you here.
Yeah. All right. We are officially out of time. My thanks to everybody, to Alan and Mike and Rich. Rich, good to have you back.
Yes, Rich.
We'll talk to you soon. We thank you very much. We'll continue more Roundtable panel tomorrow and more Roundtable right after this short break.